Nedarim, Perek Gimel, Mishnah Aleph, 3:1. Up to now, the first two prakim have been focused on the fact that even if one doesn't exactly say precisely the proper formula to effect a neder, we assume that he's trying to make himself restricted in some way, and therefore we go lechumra under normal circumstances and interpret his words to be a binding neder. I summed it up with the two principles that you have to mean what you say, but not necessarily say what you mean. So that's shorthand and a little tongue-in-cheek. So not saying exactly what you mean is the topic we've had up to now. The first principle of you have to mean what you say is my loose translation of piv velivo shavin. You have to have your mouth and heart in alignment, meaning what you say with your mouth has to reflect what you feel in your heart in terms of trying to affect the nether. If you never meant to be bound by nether, then the nether won't be binding, even if what you said with your mouth would be a fulfillment of the requirements, the technical requirements for a binding nether. So the topic here in our first Mishnah and Mishnayos here is scenarios in which, although what one said is clearly conforms with the technical requirements to effect a nether, so what he said is clear enough, he's trying, that it's nether talk, it's a nether formula, but it's clear from context that he never meant to be bound by that nether, so then we'll say clearly, piv velibo eino shavin, his mouth and heart are not in the same place, he didn't mean to bind himself, and therefore his nether will not be binding, meaning they won't be binding to the point that there's no need for she'elas chacham, for hataras nadarm. Simply he can go on, that was just a matter of speech, a rhetorical tool he was using when he made that that would-be neder. Now that said, the Mishnah will say that there are four categories of nedarim which sound like technically that they would work as neder, but clearly they didn't mean to be binding, therefore he won't be bound by them. And although he's not bound by them, the halacha is one ought not to do this l'chachila. One's not allowed to play games with nedarim and use neder as a rhetorical tool to make his point. No, you shouldn't do that. If you do, you're not bound by it, but it's wrong from the outset, because the Torah's principle clearly is when it says that a person shouldn't be yachel dvaro, shouldn't profane his speech, it's telling people to take what you say seriously and not say things you don't mean. Now, the Mishnah says inside, Arba nedarim hitiru chachamim. There are four categories of neder, which, like I said, while they might be technically sufficient to effect a neder, given the context in which they were made, the person is not bound. And therefore, the rabbi said that they are from the outset unbinding, hetir chacham, and no need for the formal hatar sadarim to go ask a chacham or a bezdin of three to release him from that vow and annul it after he made it. So what are these four categories? Nidrei zeruzin, the darim used by people who are trying to induce someone, motivate someone to do something. Kohanim zrizim hem, there's zrizim, they're self-motivated. Zeruzin is to motivate someone else, to induce them to do something, so it's part of negotiations. V'nidre havai, havai means like something like hot air. So these are the darim which are like, you know, that are obviously just exaggerations and not meant to be taken literally at all. We'll see a bit more about that. V'nidre shugagos, shugaga is an inadvertent mistake. So the point is he clearly didn't mean to be bound by this nether. And the fourth category is nidre anasim. These are nedarim that are like once forced into keeping, they're necessarily true. So the point is you see the conditions couldn't be meant to be taken literally because there's no other choice. We'll see more about that also. So here the rest of this mission will focus on this first category of nidre zeruzin. So nidrei zeruzin keitzad, what are nedarim called nidrei zeruzin to induce someone to do something which is not binding? So, for example, hayamocher chefetz. You got a guy, he's trying to sell something, and he says, they're haggling back and forth. And, you know, he says he wants 4 dinarim for it, which is the same as a sella. And the purchaser says, no way, I'm not paying more than 2 for it. That's a shekel in the Mishnah. So they kind of are, you know, as a haggle, each party, the buyer and seller, both used an expression of a neder to sort of make a forceful position to try to bring the other person closer to their, you know, their price. So, hayamocher chefetz v'amar. The seller says, konam she'eni poches lecha min ha'sela. which means, not literally, it means he identifies something. Like, for example, I don't know, his car. He says, my car will be forbidden to me like a korban. That's the word konam here means. If I violate the following vow, she'eni pochas lecha min hasela, if I would sell it to you for anything less than a sela, for less than 4 dinar. So that would mean the meaning of the word sounds like if he sells it for 3 dinar in the end, so then his car becomes forbidden to him. But he never meant that. He wanted to actually sell it for 3, just he used this strong language to bring the buyer up closer to his price. And similarly, Vahala, the other guy, the buyer, the would-be buyer, Omer, he says, Konam she'eni mosif l'cha ala shekel. He says something else of his is forbidden to him. You know, he says, well, my car also is forbidden to me if I agree to pay you anything more than a shekel, 2 dinar. So the seller wants 4, the buyer is saying not more than 2. Now, obviously, if they don't end up doing a transaction, then there's nothing to talk about. But what happens if they do end up doing a transaction at 3 dinar? So that means, technically speaking, based on the words they said, the seller sold it for less than 4, the buyer paid more than 2, and both of them, what they said, seems the conditions have been met. It seems like they should be bound by the nether. But the point is, they're not bound, because shnehem rotzen b'shlosha dinarim. From the outset, when they said that, what they said, they were just using it as a tool, a rhetorical tool, to motivate the other person to come close to their price, and they were intending on agreeing in 3, so they never meant in the first place. And therefore, you see, when they came to an agreement at 3, so that was what they meant all along. Now, the din will be like this, but interestingly, the Rama brings a halacha, which is, listen, the Mishnah is kind of unusual in that, these are my words now, the Mishnah is kind of unusual in that it brings both sides of the story. It could have just said, the seller wants 4, and he went for 3. Why does it say that both sides of the haggle, seller wants 4, buyer wants 2, and they meet in the middle at 3? To tell you that when the seller said, no, I'm not going less than 4, what he meant was that he definitely isn't going to agree to 2. And similarly, when the buyer, who was at 2, says he won't go past, you know, he won't go past 2, what he meant is he won't pay 4. So therefore, if they end up doing agreeing to sell to do the deal at 4 or at 2, so then one of the darm would be actually fulfilled, and the person, let's say they did the deal at 4, the buyer would actually, who said he won't pay any, you know, a penny more than 2, he ended up paying 4, his, and he took a neder if he did, so he meant in his heart, if I pay 4, then I'm going to, if I pay your price that you're asking right now, then my car is forbidden to me, whatever it is, so he'd be bound by that. That's how the Rama brings. Okay, according to everybody, it's the context of the haggle which makes it that they're not bound. Hypothetically, just to give an example, let's say they say, fine, we're not budging, and they walk away. And then a week later, you know, the guy's just desperate, the buyer, and he pays 4, or even pays 3, pays more than 2, whatever it is. So you see that he meant it when he said it, because he walked away. But later on, he ended up, you know, doing what he said he wasn't going to do. So then he'd be bound by his nether. Okay, because the context is no longer relevant anymore. Okay, now the Mishnah goes on to say, Rabbi Eliezer ben Yaakov Omer. He gives another example of Nidre Zeruzin, a nether made to induce someone. Now there's missing words here. The Mishnah just simply says, Afarot lahadir es chavero sheyochel etlo. Even a guy who's trying to take a vow to get his friend to eat by him. So the Gemara says there's a bunch of missing words here. Chaser mesra, but chachi katani. The missing words are, they're again, they're trying to, Mr. A and Mr. B are trying to, they're just talking about him, Mr. B coming to Mr. A's house for dinner. And Mr. A says, you know, you got to do it. And he pushes him to get him to do it. He pushes, says, listen, if you don't come to me for dinner, you don't have a nice meal with me, a hot dish and a cold drink, whatever it is. So then, you know, then I'm, whatever. My car is forbidden to you forever, and you're never getting a ride with me to shul ever again or something. So the point is, clearly in context, he didn't mean to really say his car is really forbidden to this guy. What he was trying to do is get the guy to come for dinner. So that being the case, he clearly is, he didn't mean literally a netter, just a figure of speech, to be mizdarez him, to motivate him, induce him to come to dinner. And that being the case, even if the guy doesn't come for dinner, then the netter is not binding. Okay, so that's the second example of what Nidre Zeruzin would be, and that's also brought down the halacha, period. Now, the next line of our Mishnah is like, off topic, okay? This is not giving you another example of Nidre Zeruzin. It's simply like a side point. What if a person wants to, from the outset, before he makes it into the Dharam, undermine them? And Omer, what if a guy says, Kol neder sh'ani asid lador, a person says, any neder that I make in the future, hu batel. It's from right now, it's ineffective, it's annulled, I don't mean it. So, the Mishnah is missing words again. But the missing words say that indeed, that would be effective. And if he wants to make such a condition ahead of time, he then has effectively undermined his nadarm. Ubilvad shehi zachur b'sha'as haneder, says the Mishnah, provided that he remembers that condition he made, that it should be batel at the time he makes the neder in the future. If he remembers it, then that stipulation kicks in, and the neder is not affected. But if he forgot about it, so now he means that neder, and he'd be bound by it. Now that's what the words of our Mishnah mean, that's what they say, that's what the Bartender explains it. The truth is, there is a machlokas in the Gemara. This is what the Mishnah should read, or whether it actually should say, Ubilvad shelo yehei zachor, that he doesn't remember at the time. Now, the Bartanura, who says, explains the Mishnah like we have it in front of us, goes consistently with the explanation of Rava in the Gemara. Now, Abaye said no, it should say, Ubilvad shelo yehei zachor, that it provided he doesn't remember. Because what does that mean? That means if a person said at the beginning of the year, all my nedarim this year don't count, I don't mean them, and then he remembers that he's about to make a neder, and he remembers that he made such a condition, and then he says the neder anyways, so obviously what he means to do, says Abaye, is to override that stipulation. Otherwise, why is he making the neder? He didn't mean it. If he claims he doesn't mean it, why is he saying it? So, according to Abaye, the shot in the Mishnah should be, although you have to change a word here, is that if he doesn't remember that condition, then it works. Because the point is, from the outset, when he had he was thinking rationally, he said, no Nadarm this year. But if he remembers it and says it anyways, then he's bound by it. And the Shulchan Aruch, Paskin's like Abaye. Meaning, notwithstanding what our Mishnah says, if a person makes a condition at the beginning of the year and says, if I make neder later on, it doesn't count, I'm not bound by it. So then that stipulation would be effective, provided that he makes some neder later on and doesn't remember he made such a condition. But if he remembers his condition and he says it anyways, that overrides the condition and the neder is binding. Now this is very, not just because it's brought down in Shulchan Aruch that it's relevant to us, but according to many Rishonim, the rationale behind Kol Nidre is also to put this into effect, to say that any nadar that I make later on in the year should not be binding now. And to the extent that one does say Kol Nidre to include such a stipulation, so that would be true, meaning would be effective in undermining and, eviscerating, stopping the neder from being chal in the first place, from being binding in the first place, provided that he does not remember and be mindful of that, that loophole, that get-out clause, at the time he makes a neder later on. If he remembers it, then it would be his, and he says that anyways, he's overriding that stipulation. Now, at all events, it's brought down that one should not rely on that declaration, l'charchila, so it's a sort of a catch-all, but normally if a person makes a neder, even if he wasn't mindful of that stipulation at the beginning of the year, or on Yom Kippur, as the case may be, for Kol Nidre, that he makes it, still, l'charchila, he should still go to do She'elos Chacham and do Hataras Nadarim and not rely on that stipulation at the beginning of the year, and only in sort of extenuating extreme circumstances would one rely on that condition he made at the beginning of the year.